You are joining Making a Difference with Melissa Clark, a new show that shares the compelling stories and voices of well-known and everyday people who change the world in big and small ways. Enjoy our guests, call in, or just listen to be inspired, for this show was made with you in mind. Please join us every Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with our special guests. And you can listen to our recast at www.melissaclarkshow.com.
Hi, thank you so much for joining us here on Making a Difference. I'm Melissa Clark. I am thrilled to have actor, director, producer, incredible writer, Mr. Larry Romano on the show today. You may best know him as Richie on the hit show, The King of Queens. We discussed everything from his brush with cancer to his amazing career and what we are going through in the world today. We're going to get his point of view, and his passion never seems to amaze me. So check it out. Hey, Larry, how are you?
How you doing, Melissa? How are you?
I'm good. How you doing? You're back in Missouri. You just visited New York City, and now you're back in Missouri. How'd that go?
Yeah, you know, everything's cool. Just working on, working out with Gateway to Hope and raising money for the women's charity for women with breast cancer. Doing that with Cameo and Extreme Autographs to You. Mm-hmm. Which all proceeds going to Gateway to Hope, which I'm really excited about because, you know, I mean, you get to help out people that really need help, you know, breast cancer, serious stuff. There's the whole deal with cancer, you know, and they need help because, you know, you need help with your bills and stuff like that. And I saw Monique Levy, she was on the television station early morning show out here, and I caught it and I saw what they were doing. And I says, I'd like to see if I could join on and get on board and help out. And so, yeah, that's what we're doing, working with Cameo.
Awesome.
Happy birthday, Merry Christmas, whatever. Happy
they can go to your website, LarryRomano.com, to find the, or they go to Cameo.
Go to Cameo, yeah. I guess you look at our Cameo, Autographs for You, Extreme Autographs. There's a couple of different places out there.
So tell us about your time on The King of Queens. That was a wonderful sitcom in the 90s. You played Richie. Mm-hmm. And yep. How is that like? How did you get that that role?
Fence that, you know, came about. I had just finished a movie called The Thin Red Line, and I went on the audition for King of Queens, and obviously I got the role. So I got to be a part of a classic historical sitcom. Very fortunate. Mm.
Yeah. How you were on that show for two seasons?
Two seasons. Yep.
How did you feel when you heard about Jerry Stiller? He just recently passed away.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously it was not, you know, it's very, you know, very sad news. It's the end of a legend and era.
You know,
he was just a fantastic guy to work with and fantastic guy to be around. You know, and beyond that, he comes from a generation that's, you know, steadily disappearing, you know, guys that, you know, come from that time in New York City, mm-hmm. You know, there's not too many of them left. So, you know. Along with him dies all those stories.
What do you mean by that? You mean like old school Hollywood folks?
Yeah, I mean, these are people that lived in different, you know, lived through different times. We're all living through tough times right now with what's going on, but these guys also did too with different kinds of tough times. But, you know, and they had their own stories, you know, before cell phones, before people had houses phones in their houses, you know, you had to go down to the candy store and, you know, put a dime in there, you know, and, you know, that's the generation that guy came from, and that doesn't exist anymore. So with him, you know, part of that all, you know, is going slowly bye-bye, you know?
Yeah. But, and Hollywood is changing as well, right? In your opinion, Hollywood has changed.
Yeah. It's, you know, those guys, there was a lot of interesting guys out there, you know, back in the day, and, you know, the world has changed, obviously, you know.
Well, you know Hollywood and you know A-listers. You've worked with Al Pacino, Sylvester Stallone, Johnny Depp, Mickey Rourke.
Yeah.
What was that like, Larry, working with those guys?
Well, I mean, you know, going back to the whole thing with Hollywood, like right now, like back, you know, going back to Jerry Stiller's time and going back to, like, Don Rickles and all those guys, you know, those guys were like hardcore Americans, you know, they were believers in America, you know, and they come from a time when Hollywood would blacklist communists. And, you know, the way it feels right now in Hollywood is that they blacklist Americans. They don't, it's like the opposite switch, you know, and which makes it, I think, in a lot of ways, a lot less interesting. Yeah, I think that, you know, they make movies out there that, you know, are made by Americans, but, you know, with a sale to a foreign audience on their mind, as opposed to in the 70s when they just made movies. They were Americans and they made movies, you know, because they had great stories to tell. Now it's like a business model, which kind of, you know, it makes everything a little contrived, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Probably a little boring to work in that realm, you know. And getting back to how it was, you know, Sly Stallone and Al Pacino, they come from a time when they had, you know, look what Sly did with Rocky creatively, you know, look at the roles that Al Pacino played, you know, from starting off with Panic in Needle Park and then, you know, Serpico and, you know, really fantastic stories, you know, that these guys got to be a part of.
Well, you're a part of a fantastic story, The Thin Red Line. How was that? You went to Australia for 6 months. What was your role in that film?
I was a soldier boy, you know, going World War II and going out there. And, you know, a lot of things we learned about war in that particular movie is we got to, you know, hang out with guys that were in wars. And, you know, nobody's really enthusiastic about going into combat. I mean, people might say they might be. I don't know. But it's, you know, you're going to get shot at. And so it's, you know, my particular character really didn't want to be there. And much like most other guys, they didn't want to be there. But, you know, that's what I learned a lot on that, you know, from that point of view. And then in filmmaking, I got to work with Terrence Malick and John Toll, who's a DP, director of photography, and some really terrific actors, Jimmy Caviezel, Tim Blake Nelson, and, you know, the usual suspects, you know, like Sean and stuff, you know, get to hang out with those guys and live in Australia.
Sean Penn?
Yeah, Sean, yeah. I work with Sean, yeah.
Did you talk to anybody in the military to find out exactly like being forced somewhere that you don't want to be, or how did you prepare for that?
We did 2 weeks in military training in the bush in Australia, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
2 weeks without a bath. Yeah, that was really, yeah, that was pretty, you know, big adjustment, you know what I mean?
You couldn't take a bath?
You know, no, I mean, what are you gonna do? You're in a bush, you know what I mean? Out there in the wilderness, you know, bathing. You know, but anyhow, that was definitely an experience getting to do work on that movie. Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting that you worked with all these top people. And in my opinion, I think you should be top because you are such an incredible writer and director. And we're going to talk about your film Saturday in the Park. But, you know, for the listeners, a film that you directed and you wrote, but for the listeners, for a new actor coming out and working with an A-list star, what advice would you give to them so they're not so nervous?
Well, you know, I mean, I really, you know, I guess Sylvester Stallone was fantastic. It was my first big movie to work with Sylvester Stallone. And, you know, we rehearsed the scene together. We went over the scene together and he was willing to talk about the scene. So each actor is different, you know.
Were you nervous when you first met him?
Sly was really cool. He was very welcoming and talked about the scene and talk about what we're going to do here and how it is and X, Y, and Z. So that was good, you know.
And what would you tell somebody who's about to work with somebody like that?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, just play it by ear, really, you know, I guess, you know. I mean, stars could be in good moods. They could be in bad moods, you know.
And yeah.
The thing about working with stars, you don't know sometimes what you might get. I mean, there's some notorious guys out there that you don't want to be really even around, so.
Have you ever had an experience like that before?
Where the workplace was uncomfortable?
Yeah, you don't have to say any names, but just, you
know. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Where you really just decide, like, man, is this really, like, where you want to be, you know? Do you want to be around these people? Do they fall into the life is too short, no matter how long the money is type of situation? I think everybody probably falls into that in all businesses, mostly, you know.
And let's talk about Saturday in the Park.
Yeah,
that is a wonderful, it's based on a play that you were actually in.
Yeah, it's a play I wrote when I was at the Strasbourg Theater Institute in New York City, and they put it on as a work in progress way back in 1987. And as you know, the movie set in 1986.
Yes, yes. Fantastic coverage, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really like the vintage scenery in the Bronx. Is it?
Yeah, the Bronx. Yeah, we had to work hard to get the costumes and the automobiles and the locations. And the challenge was getting the actors that were you know, able to pull that off. And I feel as if, you know, we have actors that are unknown, which I think that's fantastic because they were given the opportunity to play these roles, which, I mean, you saw the movie, you saw the performances.
I loved it so much. The writing was fantastic. And it took a lot for two new actors to be able to, you know, do the dialect and keep up with the scene, you know?
Yeah, I think that the entire cast, I mean, one of the guests you had on, Katharina Michio, plays the mom.
She was
very good. Chuck Zito was really good as the dad. Pete Antico as the guy who owns the local bar. You know, they were just, you know, Sammy Guzman. I think that we was able to really get, and I think, you know, I know for a fact that the experiences I've had as an actor, and whether from casting, going out on auditions, or being on the set and studying, I think that was a phenomenal asset to being able to direct these guys.
Obviously,
knowing the material so well is too, but I think that became a really, you know, fantastic asset, and I enjoyed it tremendously.
Wonderful film, and you know. Besides Katharina Michio, her talent, she also has her beautiful artwork in there, which you were very fond of. So I just wanted to ask you.
Initially how I got, you know, I found Katharina, you know, I saw her work on display at the Cunning Room in New York City.
And
I spoke with her and I saw her, you know, she does a lot of musical artists, you know, Louis Armstrong, and B.B. King, and Steven Tyler, a lot of really cool stuff. And I think that it, you know, the lead character played by Ilya Constantine, his character's name is Danny. I wanted his mom to be an artist of some sort.
Right.
And Katharina came in, she nailed it, and we used her art in the movie, which I think you saw in the production design, right?
Yes. It was actually a wonderful film. And just wondering when you're going to release it.
That's the million-dollar question. It's a piece of art. You know, obviously, there's commerce involved in art. And, you know, as you enjoyed the movie, you enjoyed watching it. So
yes.
As far as seeing a movie, I don't know. I think we might just have private screenings where people could pay for us to come, you know, to their house to cast, and they could get their friends together, like under 10 people, because we have to have gatherings under 10, or a restaurant, maybe with, I mean, if they put the limit up to 50, we all wear masks, or we all get whatever. or you wait until, you know, after November 4th and everything will be fine. We could have all sorts of parties.
God willing.
Yeah, you know, and we could have crowds of 100. Well, actually, we could disguise it as a riot or a protest.
It's true.
You have masses of people just come down with no mask and yell at the screen.
It's sad, but true.
It's true, right? We're not telling any fibs here.
No.
Truth. If we wanted to have a protest with hundreds and hundreds of people right now, we're good. But
yeah.
To open, you know, a restaurant, you got a business, you got to have people 6 feet away.
I know we're in crazy times right now.
We're in crazy times, and you know, and that's it is what it is. Well, I think it's very enlightening times. I think we can see a lot of what's going on because just because we're American don't mean we're stupid.
Yeah.
John, but yeah, it doesn't make any sense. So anyhow, back to showing the movie. I guess that if a group of people wanted to see the movie, we have the director come and hang out. We get some, you know, order pizzas and stuff like that. And we could even, I don't know, maybe figure out somewhere where donations go to charity or something like that. And we just show the movie in their house. Hey, we can enjoy ourselves and watch the movie like you did.
Well, tell the audience what the film is about, please.
It's semi-autobiographical. It's about two lifelong buddies, a guitar player and a drummer. And they're at the crossroads of their lives, which means they're in their early 20s and figuring out what they want to do with their lives, like most of us at that age.
Yeah.
And And times are changing, obviously, for the drummer at that particular time in history. The drum machine was becoming very prominent, you know, and for a drummer, the music scene was changing. And in New York City at that particular time, the crime rate was very, very high, much like it is now again.
Yeah.
And the only thing is difference is I think it was more crack fueled back then, you know, a lot of gun violence, a lot of crack, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And these kids are working to make their way through it. And it's two lifelong pals who spend a Saturday night in the park they grew up in, and they decide their future.
Right.
In New York City. And that's what the movie's about. It was, you know, it was a play. We did it at Lee Strasberg, then it went to off Broadway. And that's where Sly Stallone's casting agent, Joy Todd, she saw the play. And boom, bop, next thing you know, I'm in a movie with Sylvester Stallone. So I actually played both roles on stage. I played Danny on stage in New York, and I mm-hmm. played Mikey when we did it in Los Angeles. And in this particular movie, I play nobody.
Yeah, you decided not to be partake in the film, but just to be behind the scenes.
As an actor, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. I kind of feel as like cheesy when he's like, unless you're like Orson Welles or Sly Stallone or Woody Allen. I mean, Kevin Costner did it, but he was already so established, you know, as an actor. He'd been on so many productions, and he had worked with so many, you know, professionals that when it came time to doing Dances with Wolves, you know, we had a really great crew around him, you know, the DP, the producers, and so on and so forth. So in mm-hmm. my particular instance, I didn't have that.
Yeah.
Experience, but you need a real, you know, you need an experienced team around you. And we really use a lot of upstarts, but it came out great, man, you know.
I love
it.
Didn't
want to be, I couldn't act in it, you know, Melissa. I just couldn't do that.
I hear you. You know, I saw something on Facebook. Reese Witherspoon actually did that. She couldn't get any roles in any films. I don't know why. She's a fantastic actor. So she started her own production company. And that's when she did Legally Blonde. And that became a huge hit.
No, I don't know that.
You don't know that story?
No, but I'm sure that happens, you know. Stuff like that, but, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know that particular story. I didn't know that at all. Legally Blonde, really?
Yeah, she started. Yeah, she starred and she produced in it. And that's how, you know, it became a big hit. But once again, you know, the talent has to be there as well. So,
And you need good people around you. It's a team effort.
Yeah.
You need producers who are on board and you know, knowledge and, you know, blah, blah, and you're not in
course.
And you need a director of photography and costumes and, you know, just, you know, hair and makeup. You need the whole squad, man, you know. And you need fantastic actors who are totally going to show up and dedicate themselves to the project, you know.
What's the two guys who played Danny and Mike? That beautiful.
Danny is played by Ilya Constantine. And a phenomenal young actor. And Mikey is played by Aaron Sorter, another awesome, phenomenal actor.
Great. Yeah, that was a really good film. I hope everybody goes and requests Larry. Where can they find you to request if they want to?
I don't know. They could call you. You're gonna put
Reach out to me. I actually act as his PR sometimes.
Right.
So reach out to me and I'll
call Melissa, 1-800-MELISSA.
Crazy guy. You can send me an email, melissa@melissaclarkshow.com, if you'd like to see a private screening of it. It's a fantastic film. The writing is incredible. That's the, you know, and this guy's pretty amazing. So thank you so much for putting that out into the universe, and I hope a lot of people see it.
Yeah.
Let's discuss a very sensitive topic of you went through throat cancer. You had stage 3 throat cancer. When was that, Larry?
Started in 2016 and, you know, carried on for quite some time. Still deal a little bit here and there as far as the ramifications of mm-hmm. treatment, which, you know, entailed the 38 blast of radiation to the neck and head area and like a bunch of chemotherapy.
Wow.
And, you know, feeding tube and all of that stuff. So it's been a little bit of a setback, you know.
Were you ever scared in that? Did the doctor ever say that you have... you know, what your survival rate was?
I really, if anything, you know, scared. No, I think that I was just more frustrated that this was going to be, obviously, I didn't think it was going to be this big a delay.
Yeah. It was a hiccup in your life.
A serious one. Yeah. It took a lot more, still taking a lot more time than, you know, I really anticipated, man. It really set you back. you know, which is, you know, part of, you know, a big reason why I'm, you know, working with Gateway to Hope to help people get back on their feet and stay on their feet, you know, because I understand that this is, you know, this is a very, you know, just because you got over it, you know, doesn't mean your body is comes back right away. So that could be an issue, you know, so for a lot of people.
And you lost a lot of weight. How much weight did you lose?
I went down 125 pounds, man, you know, and I went into a feeding tube, and it was, like I said, I didn't, even when I started the treatments, I thought that I was going to be able to be, you know, bouncing around and so on and so forth. But I was wrong about that. That's for sure, because it really knock you out, man. 35 shots. And, you know, really, I guess when you talk, well, now that we're talking about this, the reality is, in tying in Saturday in the Park, the movie, I got to give as much love to my friend John Shogren, who edited the movie, deferred. He didn't take a salary to edit the movie that you have, that you saw right now. Mm-hmm. And then he pretty much drove me to chemo and radiation every day for 7 weeks. So on that note, you know, that was, I was very fortunate there too. There's a lot of people that don't have a support team around them to do that.
No.
You know? It's no. Tough, man, you know. And well, not on that note, you know, but you know, that's why we're doing the thing with Cameo and Extreme autographs to you. That's why we're doing part of that, is because that's what we do.
Yeah.
See if we can
thank
help.
You. Thank you for helping people with cancer. As you know, my mother passed away from cancer. You know, you had a couple of people in your life passed away from cancer.
Tough deal, man. Yeah.
It is a tough deal.
You know, it is what it is. So, but breathe fresh air, carry on, don't be stressful.
Yeah.
Don't deal with people who cause you stress and aggravation.
Well, that's what I wanted to just ask you as well. You know, after your weight loss, you know, did you get feedback from people, negative feedback of how you looked, and they didn't know what you went through because you weren't really public with it?
Well, yeah, man, you know, I mean, obviously, look, you know, I think I've told, and we've talked about this before, that, you know, no matter who you are, if you're a professional athlete, you're, you know, you're in the entertainment business, you're a musician, you know, mm-hmm. you're a politician, people are going to look to hit you any which way they can. That's just the way it is, man. You know, it's like, you're going to stick your head above the crowd, you're going to be people that want to chop your head off. And that's the first lesson you have to learn about it, pretty much, not just being in entertainment or being in the limelight, but you just have to realize that that's just the way it is, man. Whether, even if you're going to school, I'm sure there's kids in high school, like, they, you know, there's people looking to want to take them down a notch all the time, you know, spread rumors about girls or spread rumors about this. It's, you know, but so you got to just, like, suck it up. So, yeah, people say that, like, some not so nice things about, you know, whatever. Because I did lose a bunch of weight, you know what I mean? And all that, you know, I took a beating, you know what I mean? But whatever, man, you know, I'm still here slamming, jamming, rocking.
Yeah.
And I think you know that right now. Yeah, but I'm still kicking in. I can still capable of quite a lot, thank God. Thank God. And if you don't believe in God, well, then that would be that's your business. We live in America, so you're free to believe that you don't believe in God. And God willing, we will retain those freedoms moving forward, because what we're going on through right now is that, you know, as well as I know, and I think you experienced it, we talked about this as well too, is that you have this cancel out, whatever, society, cancel out gang, crew, you know what, and it will cancel you out, man, you know?
Yeah.
All the people that, you know, you express your opinions, if it's not on par with what they believe, they cancel you out. And it's like, that's not going to fly in America, bro. It's just not going to fly.
Right. So let's talk about that really quick. And thank you for sharing your story with cancer. I know that, you know, you don't really talk about it that much. So I really thank you. Just one thing before we go into the next topic, what advice would you give to somebody who is going through cancer right now?
You know, man, I guess, you know, just, you know, eat a lot of, if you're going to eat, be able to eat organic food is good, you know, and just start to breathe, be mind strong, you know, your mind be strong, you know, mm-hmm. It's about really all I could say, your mind be strong, you know.
Did you find yourself a little bit more spiritual after that journey, or even now? Are you a spiritual person, Larry?
I would say absolutely, yeah, without a doubt. I just said thank God and God willing, right?
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, spiritual and like meditation.
A little bit, you know, I guess so much. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know? Okay. Thank you so much for that. Let's discuss what we're about to talk about with animals and what do you call that? Canceling out?
cancel out crew.
And so
full discrimination where you get discriminated because people, because you don't agree with somebody 100%, which is the political discrimination.
You know? Yeah. So I had introduced you and David Zier. David Zier is a talk show host from Studio 6B?
Studio B and
Studio B.
America's Voice.
America's Voice. And he's a wonderful man. And you guys hit it off very well because you have the same beliefs.
I work with a lot of serious musicians. And this song that came out based on what's going on right now.
But you're a very talented drummer as well, if I can just add that in.
I don't know about drumming, man. Not really. You know what I mean? I'm all right. You know, I mean, I don't think you've heard me.
Don't sell yourself short. Okay. You're pretty good.
Well, you know, I'm all right. But in this tune right here, you know, Angelo Barbera.
Yeah.
I'm a musician. He plays everything. The drums, the bass, the bongos. And he produces it. And I wrote the lyrics and music is his. I wrote the lyrics and I perform the lyrics. And then David had the video done there, Divide and Conquer, which is pretty fiery, you know, which got you in a little bit of hot water because we thanked you for introducing us. And the next thing you know, Melissa's in trouble.
Out of a dog because of you now.
The dog loses because of the cancel out lady.
So let me just say what happened. I was supposed to get a little Pomeranian. I was supposed to adopt a little Pomeranian dog that was just born, 2 months ago. So the breeder has been calling the dog the name that I've chosen. I spoke to her. I have a public program here where I really don't, I am who I am. I'm not different in real life. I mean, I'm sure.
I said that too one time.
Yeah, Larry, my friends can vouch for me. So Larry had tagged me. She saw it. And we're friends on Facebook, and she called me up and she says, I'm not giving you this animal because you're uncompassionate. You have no compassion.
Because you're being a Trump supporter, which the video has absolutely nothing to do with Donald.
I'm not even a Trump supporter.
Right. You know why? Like, even if you were, that's the president of the United States. Even if you were, that's a constitutional right.
I support the president. You know, I support what's going on in our country because he's our president. So I'm respecting him.
I just, and I can't support or believe in a woman who denies a dog a home. Well, you give the dog a beautiful home, you and Elvis, and she's going to tell you all of a sudden that you can't have this dog because you got tagged in a video that to a song that I wrote.
But that dog wasn't for me, I guess. And I just pray that precious, beautiful, so beautiful, little, gorgeous little Pomeranian gets a great home because, Hendrix here, anybody who knows me and my dog, Hendrix gets treated better than human beings. So,
and I think the whole thing to come out of this is that, the understanding is that people that are going this far to discriminate against others for political whatever is gone too far.
Yeah.
And the people that have yet to go as far as this woman has gone need to like reel in those people or start to put the brakes on this whole thing because you can't, I can't sit there and say, hey, you don't believe in what I believe in. I don't care if this is America and I'm going to cancel you out or I'm going to like discriminate against you and not give you an animal. And that's what's going on right now. And that's a big, in a lot of ways, your freedoms right now as an American right now, potentially can, they're being trampled on. They are being trampled on. Yours was, you were just trampled on. The dog was just trampled on. And that's a disgusting thing. And
it's not kind. It's not kind.
Watch the video, Divide and Conquer, and there's more where that came from.
It's a good video, actually, because it does talk about what's going on in today's world. And everybody, if you don't agree with the people, then you're just wrong. So I don't know what to say about that. But we are going to have you on another episode with Dr. Cooper Lawrence. She wrote a book about celebrities and politics. And I'd love for you to be a part of that because you're so open in speaking about all this. So I think we are good, and you're an amazing person. And I want you to do Cameo.
Cameo, Gateway to Hope, autographs to you, phone in, zero in, send a video. Even if you don't like the King of Queens, even if you don't like Richie, you can have me say whatever you want me to say, well, within reason.
Larry, tell us, you know what I forgot? Tell us why you left the King of Queens. Why did you depart from that show?
I think I want to save that for the book.
Okay. Okay.
But, did you see that video that we did for the song for the King of Queens, the theme song that we wrote?
Yes, I did. Yes, I love it. Where can...
I'll send you a link, man.
Send me a link. I'll put it in with your bio.
Yeah, you know? So that's like a really... That's just, you know, how I express myself lyrically, musically, you know? There's a lot of music that we got quite a few records already written. Mm-hmm. Once again, you know, it's like, you know, I don't know. I think I might release some stuff, you know? You can look up some stuff on the band and all that stuff that when we were playing live. But, like, I like to, you know, I could express myself lyrically, and the King of Queens is like a nice little jingle. You know what I mean? Nice little friendly song, opposite of Divide and Conquer, of course, where I'm just like pissed off and just like rah, you know what I mean? But the other one.
Can I just ask you kindly, do you lose a lot of people in your life because of your political status?
Well, I've been discriminated against in Hollywood, obviously. And, you know, like I said, back in the day, on Jerry Stiller's day, you know, they used to blacklist communists. Now they blacklist Americans. So, yeah, I'm definitely swimming upstream over there, man, you know, without a doubt. But that's okay, too, because I'm, you know, fortunate, like, you know, you says, like, I could write movies and I could produce our own products. We don't need Hollywood machine.
Yeah. You
know, but we do. We got talent unto ourselves, you know, obviously. And we got the internet, you know, we don't need them. But, yeah. Definitely lost the work, a lot of work. Can't get agency representation because of these political points of view and so on. Well, that's just not even my point of view. It's just the fact that I don't go along with their program.
You don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I'm not. You know what I mean? Come on. So here's, I'm going to tell you, just to wrap it up real quick. Man,
sure.
To summarize the whole thing. 2005, I went out with the USO to visit the troops in Germany, and I sort of met the troops, I met the families, I met their kids, and I met the most unselfish human beings on earth that you ever want to meet. People that wake up at 5 o'clock, 3 o'clock, whatever time in the morning to go out and service other people. You and I,
sure. Americans. Sure.
These are the guys, these people that give these people the right to protest. Not the right to riot, because that's really not, you don't really have a right to burn down other people's property as they've been doing. And as nobody on the, you know, nobody is telling them to stop other than the president.
Yeah.
And that's side of the aisle. But, you know, these are the USO, these are the troops, these are the people that, you know, give us the freedoms to have our freedoms, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then you return back to Hollywood, where you come from a world where you just was with the most unselfish human beings in the world who fight for other people's freedoms. And you come to Hollywood and you meet the most selfish, self-centered people you ever want to meet in your life. And it's hard to take them seriously after that. It really is. It's very difficult to take them seriously because they are so self-centered, you know? That's the summary. We're in America right now, and we don't need to be in Hollywood to make really great entertainment for the rest of America and the world.
Yeah.
When the world sees Saturday in the Park, the world knows that it's a movie that was made by an American, raised in America. And it was not made as a piece of contrived to get your money.
Yeah. And it's authentic. It's authentic and quintessential New York. So if anybody's from New York, they can relate, to the scenes. And I really like it a lot. So I'm looking forward to people seeing it.
All right, Melissa.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Thank you, Larry. We'll talk soon.